The first thing I think that's very important to know, and there are many of the things that I would say about Trump that, interestingly, I would also say about Corbyn. When people go on about Corbyn, I say, look, just forget about him for a moment and just understand this moment, because it's a moment that produced him. And so if you don't understand the moment, then of course you're not really going to understand him. And similarly to journalists, what I say is the crime isn't whether you saw Corbyn or not, it's your complete lack of curiosity about what this moment is about. And similarly with Trump, there was a complete lack of curiosity about what it's about. Although with liberals in the media, that went to just saying, well, we don't like him, as opposed to understanding what his appeal might be. And that appeal cannot be understood outside of the context of American and American history. That America was a slave state for 200 years, an apartheid state for 100 years, and it's only been a non-racial democracy for about 55 years. So when we think of the bigotry that he spouts, and when we think of those groups chanting, send them home, and him talking about shithole countries and so on, we have to understand that he didn't invent American racism. That Trump is a manifestation of one of the crudest forms of American racism. And then we can start to kind of unpick, well, where did this come from? Now, racism is not new in American electoral politics. In the early 60s, when Nixon was making what he called his Southern strategy, he turned to his chief of staff and he said, the real problem is the blacks. And we know that that's the problem. The issue is, how do we tell people that without saying it? And that was the policy, effectively, of the Republican Party for the best part of half a century. They call it dog whistle politics. Reagan would talk about welfare queen. Bush Sr. did the Willie Horton Act. George Bush Jr. Went to a college where they outlawed interracial dating. And the Democrats played the same card too. So you have Bill Clinton, standing for election in 92, flies back home to Arkansas to be there when Willie Ray Rector is about to be executed, a man whose mental capacities are so diminished that for his last meal, he says he'll save the dessert for later, that Clinton flies back to be present in his home state when the man is executed so he can say, they won't ever get me for being soft on crime. So racism has always been central to American politics and American electoral politics. And then the question is, what's so different about now? And some of that clearly lies in the American sphere. And some of it is global, and they come together in a toxic mix, and you have the orange monster, Donald Trump. But it's not a mistake that he comes seven or eight or nine years after the beginning of the economic crisis. And that Obama is elected in the middle of the economic crisis, offering hope and change, with a massive increase in turnout, with a huge surge in optimism. And by the end of that time, whatever your views are on how Obama did, the fact is that the gap between black and white grew under Obama in terms of income and wealth. And that for large sections of America, it wasn't the change they were looking for. Now, that in itself cannot explain why Trump won, of course, because the people most likely to suffer as a result of the economic crisis were blacks and Latinos, and they did not vote for Trump. But it does speak to a set of entitlements that I actually think are fair enough. We talk often about white entitlement and people feeling entitled, but I think people, particularly in one of the wealthiest countries in the world, should feel entitled to healthcare. I think they should feel entitled to a decent education for themselves and their kids. They should feel entitled to secure work and so on and so forth. When they feel they can't get that, they look for someone to blame. Now, you've just had this massive surge of hope and change, and it didn't deliver. And then you have a candidate in Hillary Clinton who's really looking for a coronation, not a campaign, who says, we don't need to make America great again because America is great already. Who says she's standing for Obama's third term. Who, when I saw her speak in Iowa, said, some people like to overpromise and underdeliver. I like to underpromise and overdeliver. And I thought, good Lord, don't say that. It's like going to a job interview and saying, well, so it was really no surprise if you looked at the things that people were upset about. The free movement of capital, bringing wrecking jobs, NAFTA, these free trade agreements that her husband had signed, that she had supported. The massive increase in black incarceration that happened once again under her husband and that she had supported. The Defense of Marriage Act, which made sure that federally only male-female marriage, heterosexual marriage, would be recognized, which her husband signed in the dead of night and which she had defended. That there's a reason why some people said, well, you know, I'd rather go with him, and other people just stayed at home. It's not really brain surgery. It's not brain surgery how she lost, and there are only two people. There are only two people in the contest. But what's different about Trump when it comes to racism is that it used to be a dog whistle. The idea was that you would say something like welfare payments or housing credits or welfare queen, or you'd talk about jails and parenting, when everyone would know you were talking about black people. That's what Nixon said. The problem's the blacks, but you just can't say it. Trump just came straight out and said it. It went from a wolf whistle, it went from a dog whistle to a wolf whistle. And people responded. And they responded because this is a set of state with deep-seated racism that's had very little time to work its way out of the system. But it also happened because there was an inadequate response from his challenger. But there was a response. And that response primarily came through the Bernie Sanders campaign. And it was a big response. And that response said, we are going to have to do not just a couple things differently. Actually, it's not now. We cannot now say that this is a case of, well, it's him or me. You make the choice. It's a lesser of two evils. Because when it's a lesser of two evils, you still end up with evil. That we are going to need a fundamental change in who we are as a country. We are going to have to address fundamental things in terms of the free right to healthcare, the free right to higher education, and so on and so forth. And that had an appeal that rivaled Trump's. That Sanders did well where Trump did, and his coronation did not go so well because he exposed Hillary's kind of milquetoast managerialist kind of approach to politics. Just a little nip and tuck here, and we'll be fine. And people said, we're not fine. And I am happy to say that for the first time, and I reported from America for 12 years, and I go back regularly, that for the first time, mainstream Democrats are saying it's not enough to talk about who can win. We have to talk about what will change. That Trump is a representative, is an emblem of decades, if not centuries, of dysfunction. And so to claim that by changing who runs a system that is inherently dysfunctional is going to make things better is just inadequate. Which is why you see Sanders, and to a lesser extent, but still to some extent Warren, people who would never have been entertained even 8 years ago now completely shifting the discussion so that people have to ask, and this is sometimes our role. Sometimes our role, we don't win. Actually, quite often we don't win. But we can change the debate, we can change the conversation, we can widen people's visions, and we can induce real hope, not the hope that goes on a bumper sticker, but a real hope that people's lives can be changed. That because of Sanders, you have Warren, and because of those two, then people have to say, well, why aren't you for free healthcare? Why aren't you for free education? What is the point of electing you if what you're promising is that you're not going to change much? We need change, and we need it now. So Trump is a manifestation of the inadequate response to the economic crisis in a racist state. And he finds his, before we particularize him, before we choose to kind of diagnose him as an individual, we should understand that he has his counterparts in Johnson, and in Brazil, and in Italy, that this is not a local affair. This is not an issue of one man and his frail mind. It's a system and an ideology that can deliver, but that can demonize. And that demonization can be extremely effective. It can be effective in galvanizing the right, but it can also be effective, if we step up to the challenge, in galvanizing the left, not just to fight racism, but to understand racism as part of a broader societal and economic problem and get to the heart of where this comes from. Thank you.